We are recording now.
Okay.
So this is Lori Barrow. Today is November 4th, 2016. I'm a research intern at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I am interviewing Thomas Easley. I hope I said that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. This interview is taking place at the 2006 SAF National Convention in Madison, Wisconsin at the Monona Terrace Convention Center. This interview is sponsored by the Society of American Foresters and the University of Wisconsin Oral History Program and is part of the SAF Oral History Project. Can you say your name and spell your last name for me?
Yes, Thomas Rashad Easley, E-A-S-L-E-Y.
Okay, great. So to start off, can you tell me the story about how you became interested in natural resources or how you became a forester?
Okay. Wow. that's a story. No, I'll keep it brief. Okay, so I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay.
My grandparents really raised me, and they had gardens outside in our backyard. So we're in the biggest city in the state, urban environment. When I get hungry, grandma say, well, go and pick you some squash outside or something like that. Come in, clean it off, and do all of that good stuff. So I grew up not even realizing that I was doing things outdoors,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it was only about food for me, you know, like we were just basically in our neighborhood eating food and sharing it with folks. By the time I got to high school and my grandmother had passed, and that's when, like, the rocky part of my life really started, I really kind of lost focus on what I was going to do in life. So I didn't even know I was going to college. Got into a little bit of trouble too. Well, significant trouble. I shouldn't say a little bit. It changed my life completely. But that's another story. Maybe I'll put that in a book. So by the time I got to my senior year in high school, even though I got into that trouble I just mentioned, I never stopped doing my work. I love learning. I love working. And so I had a high GPA. I was like number 7 in my class. It was a pretty big class. In Fairfield, Alabama, and still didn't know where I was going to school. So I graduated high school with no plans, did a couple of college tours, no real scholarships, no money, nothing like that. You know, no one really helped me with that. And I'm not first generation.
Mm-hmm.
My mother and my father both went to school. And so right before I thought that it was over, or like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I guess I'm going to keep my job at the grocery store I was working at the time, Western Supermarket. I'll never forget that. I saw a form in my counselor's office about a USDA summer program at Alabama A&M University. And the name of the school jumps out at me because from Birmingham we have what's called the Magic City Classic, which we just had last week. Is where Alabama A&M plays against Alabama State. It's like a big rivalry in the state. It's not, I don't think it's as big as Alabama-Auburn, but it's actually a lot cooler and smoother than Alabama and Auburn. You know, we know how to dance and play music. So anyway, so I signed up for the program. I think the deadline was like the next day. I signed up for the program. Well, when I get accepted, and they're going to pay us for the summer. So at least I'm going to have some money. At least I'll make some money. And they put us in a nice dorm. And my research was actually in tissue culture, where I'm learning breaking trees down to the molecular level for the purpose of doing some type of whatever. And we were looking at how to grow loblollies faster, loblolly pine faster. And that really grabbed my attention. I was like, wow, this is cool. Because the first thing in my mind was, this is tree genetics. Can we do the same thing in human genetics and food genetics and animals? So it's like my mind just got open right then because I'd never heard of this. And it's like the inner nerd in me woke up. Dr. Rafina Ward was my mentor. She was amazing. We'll go to the lab. I learned how to do work in the hood. I mean, just everything. I got the techniques down. I read like 3 books that summer just all about this stuff, so got it in my mind. It kind of got into my central nervous system. And we had to do presentations at the end of the summer. And I think it was about 20 of us in the program, but only two of us got actual scholarships to go to the school, myself and my close friend Jerry. They called us Tom and Jerry. We became roommates and started the poetry group, and we were kind of all over the area. But they said, we'll pay you to go to school, and you come and work for the Forest Service afterwards. And I said, okay, all right. And so I signed up for it. And so that's how I got involved. So I started this research in a summer program around tree genetics that ended up spilling over into forestry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got in. That's how my career got started,
mm-hmm.
in forestry,
mm-hmm.
right there.
It's a good story.
Thanks.
And I know we're breaking from the, do you want me to close,
mm-mm.
the blinds? You're
mm-mm.
okay?
No, I need it. We good.
The vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit of your career as a forester after you got that, the scholarship?
Yes. So I worked with them for 4 years after school.
Okay.
During my undergrad tenure, I was able to. I did a lot of interns with the Forest Service, so I learned real fast, you know, what I really did or didn't want to do. I got the opportunity to participate in the National Student Exchange Program and go to the University of Georgia. That year, that was my junior year in college. That college year, that changed my life. Like, that shifted my whole path, because Alabama A&M is a historically black university in Normal, Alabama, Huntsville, Alabama, really. And only 4,000 students went there, mostly African-American. But here's the funny part. I'm in forestry. So I'm at a black school, but I'm in forestry where most of the students are mixed. That's probably one of the most mixed majors we had on campus. So I'm in class with Israeli students, with Latino students, with Arabian students, with Iranian students, and some black students and white students, you know, at Alabama A&M. Well, when I go to the University of Georgia, and I left A&M, I was frustrated with some of the things that were going on at my school, and I was just ready to get out. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, remember, I did good in school, though. When I went to the University of Georgia, that school at that time had 31,000 students. And I was at the Warnell School of Forest Resources, and I was literally the only black person in the school. So it totally switched on me. It was like, whoa, wait a minute. And that year, the reason I say that school year changed my life, because my first semester, I went from making 3.8 GPAs I made a 2.3. And it wasn't because I partied or did anything. Matter of fact, I had no fun my first semester. All I did was go to class and go to the library. That's all I did. And I had good professors. You know, they really tried to, you know, like reach out and help me. But it was one guy in particular, an African-American student named Shalom Rucker. I never forget it. I'm sorry this story goes on long, but this is what changed everything for me. He was graduating from UGA that semester. He was my next door neighbor in the dorm that I stayed in. And I'm getting ready to go back to Alabama A&M, you know, my tail tucked between my legs. And working with the Forest Service was rewarding, but it was always hard. Like, it seemed like anytime you try to change anything, it seemed like it was like God was mad at you or something. And the Forest Service always would threaten, going to take this money away, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. But that's another story for the movie they'll make about me later. And Shalon told me, he said, Thomas, you need to stay. And I was like, why? He said, because you didn't show them what I know about you. Like, I helped him pass an econ test, but I was failing econ. But I helped him. And he said, your head wasn't in the game. And I said, I went to class every day. He said, yeah, your body was there, but your head wasn't in the game. You're too busy focusing on the fact that you're the only black person in that school. He said, when instead what you should be doing is on the fact that you chose to come to UGA. Yeah, you are the only black person here, but it's not because those people don't like you. And it's really not because you don't like them. He said, they don't know you. He said, they probably went to school together, transferred from community college. I'd never known anything about community college at that time, you know, like, help me out. And they're actually friends. He said, what you need to do is you need to make friends with those folks. That's what you need to do instead of being quiet and only talking to the teachers. That next semester, I took his advice. He said some other stuff, but that was really the core of it. You know, well, the other thing he said is when people look at you funny, say they're looking at you because you look good. And introduce yourself to them and say, hey. Because then I was a much bigger person. I was like over 300 pounds then. I had long hair. So I probably didn't have the best of attitudes all the time. But, you know, but I didn't think that I belonged there. That second semester, I did exactly what he said. And I went from taking 13 hours to 16. Crazy. I'm a junior in school. I took all senior level classes and one graduate course. Crazy. I'm also a hip-hop artist. I joined two bands. So I played the trombone in a jazz band, and I rapped in a rock band. So I couldn't study as much as I could. I made a 2.3 that first semester. I made a 3.75 that second semester. I had the highest GPA in the school that semester. And what that taught me was I needed to know how to study, which I didn't know. I needed to ask for help, which I wasn't accustomed to doing. And I needed to get a chip off my shoulder so I could connect with people who didn't look like me and those who looked like me. That was my best year in college. And it was then the UGA wanted to keep me, you know, and say, hey, stay here. We're going to give you scholarship. I mean, they rolled out the carpet for me then. And, of course, UGA had all the better facilities. So I decided to go back to Alabama A&M because they're the ones who actually gave me my shot. And I said, thank you, UGA. If you want to help me, let me in the grad school later. But I'm going back to my home institution because they believed in me when nobody else would. And I went and I graduated from Alabama A&M. And then I worked in Montana for about 4 years, which was fun. You know, it was fun. It was. I was the only black guy in the county. So UGA got me ready for that, I guess. I worked in Bozeman I wasn't the only black guy in the county then, but when I worked in Red Lodge, I was. It was something. Everybody knew me. It was funny. Everybody knew me, and I knew nobody. You know, I'd be walking down the street. Hey, dude, what's up? We had a good time at the bar last night. And I'm like, I wasn't there. I really wasn't there. And it would get me. I'd be like, well, shoot, what they drinking? They seeing black people. I need to drink it, too. I would try it. You know, but Lord, the only thing that kept happening is they saw black people. I blacked out. It didn't work. You know, I just saw all black. And but it was a very rewarding experience before I went back to grad school.
Yeah. So you did 4 years with the Forest Service.
I had to pay them back. Well, really, I only did three because I wanted to go to grad school. Because what I realized is I did timber sale prep for the Forest Service. And that was fun. I loved working in the forest. I didn't love being chased by black bear. It would always make me laugh sometimes. I'm like, you call it a black bear, but that thing's cinnamon colored. Black look like me. What the hell is that running at me? Or being like pursued by moose while urinating. That's embarrassing. That's just foul. And your crew is right there in the truck, and they're gonna move the truck while I'm standing here, and the moose is coming. Anyway. I had a lot of fun up there, you know, to say the least. And while I was working there, it was a blessing because I went and visited every state in the country because I had the money to, you know. Mm. And so that was one of the big things I did while I was there. Like, let me do all of this before I turn 25. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And then I went back to grad school and I went to Iowa State University. Mm-hmm. And that was an experience. You know, I was there for like 2.5 years. And My master's is actually in genetics. Mm-hmm. So I did. So the reason I left the Forest Service is because I wanted to do something in genetics. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't just want to do your traditional silviculture, cultivating the forest. I wanted to do more of that. And that's not what the Forest Service really valued at that time. Mm-hmm. So they didn't support me going to grad school. I basically left the program. They tried to charge me for the time, even though I had already given them 75%. And, you know, but that, here again, you know, that's something else. You know, I still appreciate our government. And I graduated with my master's. And while I was in grad school, remember what I said I did in undergrad, playing in the music and stuff? The music is what always kept me going. So when I was in grad school, I was part of a band then. We toured all the time. You know, and I'd be the front person, the band be doing their thing. We get back home at 3 a.m, I wake up and I go to class the next day or go to the lab, you know, and do work. So, and one thing happened where there was a bomb that was found at a research plot. And that like one of mine, which scared the heck out of me, you know. And it was like, you know, when we had like different you know, activist groups like Animal Liberation Front, Environmental Liberation Front, that looked at GMO work around genetically modified organisms, that's what playing God. So they would, you know, like there were some acts that were done around the country. It wasn't just at Iowa State. Michigan Tech had a situation, Oregon State, I think UGA did too. But whatever they did, it was never to be done when people were there. It was always to be done when people were not there. So the intent was never to hurt people. The intent was to stop the research, if you will. And instead of me looking at that and getting freaked out about it, because the good thing is that on my committee, I had a person from the philosophy department too. Mm-hmm. I was like, after I got over being freaked out, I called a town hall meeting. I said, I want to explain to people what it is that we do. And see if that will reduce and minimize, you know, any of the protests or the, you know, issues that people had with our research. And a lot of scientists, even at Iowa State, were like, you know, they didn't think that we could do that because they didn't think that people would understand. And I'm not dumb, but I'm no genius. I was like, well, if I can get it, I know that they can. Mm-hmm. And so did a town hall meeting. Issues stopped. Mm-hmm. And one other thing happened while I was there. Just before I became a registered forester, before I became certified, my assistantship ran out. Dr. Rick Hall, he was my major professor. May he rest in peace. He actually just passed away about 5 weeks ago. And so we had to find money. And Dr. George Jackson, who also died earlier this year, he was like a vice chancellor or something at Iowa State, African-American man. But he had the pockets. He had his hand on the pocketbook of the wallets. And he gave me a job working with the McNair program. And at first I felt like I got set up because all my students were Latino. I had 12 students, all English was their second language, mostly from Puerto Rico or like Cuba. And I'm like, okay, I'm black. Why'd y'all give me, you know, all of the Latino students, but no one else, every other counselor was already like, you know, they were already at capacity. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. And it wasn't that I had a personal problem with it. I just didn't want to do a disservice to these students. You know, I was just like, I just don't want to mess them up. And the aim of the program is to help the students get into graduate school or to get a job, preferably graduate school, you know, just like Ronald E. McNair was a doctor who, you know, who died on the rocket. I was the only counselor. At the end of the year, all my students went to grad school. I was the only one. And keep in mind, like I said, all of my students were Latino. I was the only one. I'm still in touch with all of them. And then I ended up staying another year, and I had 9 Latino students and 3 African-American students. And it happened again, 100%. That's when I got interested in working with people. Mm-hmm. You know, and what I did was, at least for that first year, I did take a class in Spanish. Just like, you know, just introductory. I didn't, a lot of people say, you need to learn the language and be fluent. No, you don't. But what you do need to do is you need to extend yourself and learn something else so that you can open the door and meet people where they are. Mm-hmm. That's all I did, you know, like with the students. They took it from there. And basically what my group ended up becoming was a community within the McNair program. Mm-hmm. You know, so as long as they were part of a community, everybody rocked and rolled, everybody moved. And so I graduated from there, became a registered forester, certified forester, and then got the job. Well, I worked a couple jobs in Alabama. One was with Auburn University, and one was with another nonprofit, and it was an urban forestry. So I got my little feel of that. Made really no money. Was living with my parents again. Oh hell. And got the job at NC State. And what was good about when I got the job at NC State, they were looking for a diversity director. And I think the one thing that there were a couple of things I think that kind of got me through, because I do know that, you know, no disrespect, I know that the job description was fit to someone else's resume, whatever, and that's the truth. The guy who did it, he's a good friend of mine, but he knows that I know that. But that's something else, you know, because we can talk about the issues around diversity all day within forestry, and that's part of it. But because I could tell them about what I did in that McNair program, I'm also a forester. You don't have many of those in my college, you know, in the department at that. And then I'm African-American, and I did work for the Forest Service. So that's one of the things I had over all the other candidates that I actually had experience in forestry. Mm-hmm. And but the diversity part is where really my fame has come now, if it will. Not I'm famous, but, you know, but that's what I do well is the diversity side. So that's where I am now.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good segue into the meat of what we're trying to talk about in this, the Oral History Project. And you said you could talk all day about it, and I'm going to let you loose.
Okay.
So one of the things we're interested in this project is to develop an understanding of people's perception of diversity, mm-hmm. And inclusion within the forestry profession.
Mm-hmm.
How has your own ethnicity, cultural background, or gender influenced your career as a forester?
I think it's influenced more so my career in diversity than in forestry. I do say I know forestry because I went to school for that and I studied it, I worked it, and I did that. But diversity, in my opinion, is really what opened that door for me. Like I said, going to UGA, having that diverse experience changed it. Working in Montana, having that diverse experience changed me. Working in Iowa, having that diverse experience changed me. And then now. I think that my ethnicity, well, I identify as African-American, identify as a heterosexual Christian male, working class, middle class. I'm a Christian. You know, like I try to talk intersectionally about, you know, about myself. Shoot, I'm even a pastor. But a different kind of pastor. I'm one of the open advocating ally pastors. So I'm not really welcome around all my people who are in the clergy, you know, alongside me. Because I'm an open ally in church. Everyone is welcome and served in the church. But anyway, that's something else. I do believe that my ethnicity, it's not a curse, but a lot of times people who are black, you know, we know the saying, my skin is my sin, but my skin is my blessing. But I do believe that because of the way that my skin looks, it's contributed to the culture that I grew up in, and it's definitely helping people the way that they see me. And so in my experience in school, I've always had to work twice or three times as hard to be considered half or just as good. And I mean, even now, with all of the work that I do, it's very dissatisfying to know that, like, when you look at hierarchy at universities in particular, I mean, you'll let people be a workhorse, but you won't value them for the work that they give you. You'll let them promote your programs, and I'm a victim of that myself. You know, promote your programs, but you won't give the raises that they do that bring students to your program, or give them, you know, the different promotions that will show you that you're valued. I don't like when people try to value me the way they want to. I'm like, no, you value me the way I want to be valued. And that's been one of the issues that I've had within forestry and within natural resources, period. And that a lot of people, they literally just don't get it. You know, I'm glad that people's hearts are in the right place, but their heads are totally off this damn planet in some ways. Because even the well-meaning people are the biggest barriers. Usually, my biggest barriers are never the people who are the racists and who don't like me. No, my biggest barriers are the people who claim that they are supportive and that they want to be a part of the issue, because they themselves, because of their fragility, they don't move.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. My mother is a civil rights activist.
Okay.
My uncle was the first field lieutenant appointed by Dr. Martin Luther King. This is what I meant when I said, the more I talk, there may be some things about me that may be a little bit more interesting. That, in my opinion, that's outside of forestry.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up knowing about the civil rights movement. I grew up knowing the hell that my people and my family in particular went through. My uncle, my mom, dog sicked on them. There's a point to this. Beat upside the head, thrown in jail, threatenings of lynchings and stuff like that, and here they are still alive. What I'm saying, when I say that fragility part, I have to talk to some of my colleagues and I ask them, what the hell are you afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to do that to you. Because the people would have done it look like you. So why are you sitting still waiting? Why are you saying, why are we still talking about this? Well, like, what's taking you so long to move? You know, and that's the attitude that I have with them now, because I'm like, you're not fighting the same fight that other people, even their ancestors, fought before today. You know, your life is not in danger. Your reputation may be, your emotions may be, your security may be emotionally, but not your life, you know. And for me, I know that that's extreme. I understand that, because, you know, life, forestry, I got it. But that's really the frustrating thing about doing this, is that to me, like, that's the problem. That's one of the problems, is that people are afraid to move. They are afraid of what people will think about them. They're afraid of what faculty will think. I mean, you know, we have all the, if you're tenured especially, you got all of the unearned privileges. And I say unearned because tenure is not about you keeping a job. It was for you to be able to do research that you wanted to do and keep your job. But now tenure is just, it's this white fleece. You know, it's your union card, you know. And I really feel like the academy has abused that, and that contributes to the issues in forestry.
Hmm.
It's very, especially on the academic side. I can't say too much about government now, because I've been displaced from that for a while.
Hmm.
And so I think that when people look at forestry, like the image of forestry, like, it still trips people out when they find out that I'm a forester, especially the way I dress now. You know, I don't dress like I used to in the field. And because I have all these other chapters of who I am as a hip-hop artist, as a pastor, you know, as an activist, I do a lot of work in the community with kids and youth. And I do it more so through music, which opens the door to forestry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hook them, and then I start talking about the environment, you know. Doing that kind of work shows me that forestry in particular is the most strategically well, in my opinion, designed major for this world. Discipline. And it is the most out of touch, ignorant, asinine major and discipline at the same time.
Why do you think that is?
People in my neighborhood don't care about whether you plant a crepe myrtle or a sugar maple. I don't give a damn. That doesn't mean anything to us. We care about, do we have good food to eat?
Mm-hmm.
In our neighborhoods. We don't care about, matter of fact, you can come to my neighborhood, my old neighborhood, and talk about clear cutting. Like, is that a haircut? You know, we don't care, you know. We care about survival,
mm-hmm.
you know. Forestry, I just finished doing a talk, a diversity talk not too long ago. And please, if anyone hears this, I'm not trying to bash you. I'm just trying to bash you. Anyway, and we're talking about diversity. And when I got up and did my presentation, I was like, first off, like, we're doing this comprehensive program, elementary all the way up to grad school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, because most of these kids are going to be first generation kids. Like I said, I was not first generation, but you would have thought I was, you know, because I went into a field my parents knew nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom is an educator. My dad is a computer engineer. I mean, they're both geniuses, but they still didn't know how to do anything you know, around this time. And they didn't have any money to send me to school. So they don't know anything about financial aid and all of that, all of those, you know, kind of things. But the point I was making in the talk this morning is, you got a lot of kids, they don't even see themselves going to college. They have no idea. So while we want to diversify fields, we don't want to really look at the structural and institutional racism that has contributed to our fields being as low in diversity as it's been, which really kind of angers me a lot of times, and I'll be admit angers me, because our field wants to try to use the business model for why we want to diversify. The business model is a model that's built in fear too, because they just want to say, let's get ready for 2050. When our population is going to be half and half, the browning of America versus the graying of America. And let's get ready for it. People, it's already here. We don't need to get ready. You need to be ready. And so so I was talking about this comprehensive plan, but remember, you're dealing with kids who families, when they look at the forest, generally, and I'm speaking in general because it's an exception to every rule, obviously, the forest doesn't represent what it represents to you. Mm-hmm. See, the forest represents to you possibility and nature and beauty and serenity. It represents to me KKK lynchings, Donald Trump right now. It represents all of this ugly stuff right now. Let's make America great again. And I was like, making America white again, you know. And so when they come with that message, it's not the same, you see. So that's what I was telling them. I was like, you can't just do what happened to me, which is uproot me and take me from my home and put me in the Pacific Northwest and say, okay, now that we're paying you, do your job. Hey, I can't even get a haircut. I can't go shopping. I can't find my food up here. I can't do anything that comes natural to me right now. I have to fully assimilate. But there's a group of people in this country that still to this day, they don't all have to do that. Mm-hmm. They don't have to do that. They don't have to deal with people of color in particular. They don't want to, especially if they have the economics not to. And that's one of the big challenges. And so in the program that we help build for middle school kids, we talk about that. Show them the beauty at home. Mm-hmm. Because our neighborhoods need us. If you take us away, like, I don't want to go back to Birmingham, Alabama. I'll admit, but my mother and father were still there. When I go back home, as I like to say, when I go back to the hood, because that's where we were, you know, sometimes it's heartbreaking. You know, to go back home and see houses next to my parents' house is just like man, nobody taking care of nothing. Mm-hmm. People still maybe periodically get shot, killed. You know, it's crazy. And so, but the government's not going to fix that because that doesn't benefit the government. We have to fix that. So that's what I was telling them this morning. Not everything I'm just laying out here, kind of putting my heart on the line here. But I was just saying that our neighborhoods need us. So while y'all want to pull us away, you know, you need to find a way of either keeping us there or finding a way of you coming into our neighborhoods and doing some work with us instead of trying to get us to go out there, mm-hmm. you know. Build trust with the communities. Learn something about the community. There's a reason why a lot of times with my students at NC State, I can talk to them about all kind of stuff within their culture. Ask anything about me. And if they can't say nothing besides Beyonce, Oprah Winfrey, Jay-Z, Chris Rock, you don't know nothing. Mm-hmm. But I can talk about a lot of things across a lot of different layers because I have to, because mm-hmm. that's what's put in front of me all day. I have to avoid the ignorant media that makes black people look dangerous and bad and look at the other media that shows other people and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that forestry really needs to grab a hold of that because the image is still white male. Mm-hmm. And it's a certain kind of white male too. You know, it's not just, oh, the cool white male. No. The image is still what some people, as one of my students was telling me last night, what some people deem as racist. Which is not true. That is nowhere an accurate image of forestry. Forestry is so much more than that. Forestry is so much more than trees. Mm-hmm. Forestry is so much more than the natural environment. Forestry is urban. Forestry is in the lab, like me. I was a lab technician. You know, forestry isn't a classroom. Forestry is where food is. Forestry is where soil is. Forestry is where air and water. Forestry is everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like we still only focus on one thing. And if the evolution of forest management to environmental science, environmental technology, fisheries and wildlife, if that isn't opening people's minds to that we need to start doing some diversification with this forestry thing, here again, I'm going like, dang, y'all don't get it. It's too many degrees for people to be this stupid. Mm-hmm. It's just too many. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'll stop. I done talked long enough. All right, I'll stop. I've gone off your question. I didn't answer nothing.
I think you were spot on the question because all these things are so interrelated.
Okay.
I think you were spot on. So, yeah, no. And I think when it comes back to forestry, mm-hmm. recognizing the community within which people are situated. Mm-hmm. Is that an accurate?
Yes. That's definitely,
yeah. Okay, so
you said it a lot better than I did.
No, you said it with a lot more passion, so don't worry about it. We talked about a lot of these. I think you hit on a lot of these in a roundabout manner.
Okay.
In general, how do you think the forest profession could be? And I think you got at some of this, and I'm sorry to reiterate, beat a dead horse, as the saying goes, but how do you think the forestry profession could be more inclusive then?
The forestry profession being more inclusive. The forestry profession could be more inclusive by showing up in the neighborhoods that they are not present in right now. Mm. Forestry, like out west, is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The Pacific Northwest is lovely. It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember the white pines I saw. Mm-hmm. I remember the trees I climbed. I remember rock climbing, snowboarding. I did all that stuff. Whitewater. I still remember that because I still do it. Because that's the thing. Because I had to adjust so that I could be okay there. And then being in Iowa, to be in a place that stripped my blackness, man. I mean, boy, it took my melanin away. It was so cold there. It was like a negative 50 degrees with the wind chill. I'm like, how is it legal to still go to class? That can't be legal. Something's wrong with this, man. This can't be right. You know, at 8 o'clock in the morning, like, still had to go to class. It's crazy. But I learned so much. Even I've given all that passion in summer with an attitude, I think, with a negative kind of connotation to it. Really, I've had a blessed and a fortunate career.
Mm-hmm.
I was just expressing my own frustration. I think forestry needs to be more present, though, in areas that they're not present.
Mm-hmm.
We need to see them more in the hood. We need to see foresters more in Compton, California, in South Central California, in Southside Chicago, in the Bronx, New York. Akima Price is doing a lot of good work up in New York, by the way. Akima, A-K-I-I-M-A. I'm dropping names. She did some work with Bette Midler a while back. What's good in my hood was the name of the campaign that they came up with. And I think it was like Bronx, Brooklyn, maybe Queens, but I definitely know Bronx and Brooklyn. The Forest Service needs to be in like Newark, New Jersey. It needs to be in D.C. in certain parts, Prince George County in particular. It needs to be in Southeast Raleigh, North Carolina, which is where I reside. It needs to be in Birmingham, Alabama, where I came from. It needs to be in Atlanta, Georgia. But like in Southwest Atlanta, College Park, East Point, it needs to be in those areas where they say that they want people, then you need to go to them. The other challenging thing is, now, let me say, I'm about to speak out both sides of my mouth. I'm not a fan of standardized tests, but I don't want a doctor operating on me that didn't pass the MCAT. I'm just saying, you know, I'm just saying, like, please, you don't need to be standing over me trying to figure out, did you get number four right? Okay, I need you to do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that standardized testing makes it very hard, too, because most of the kids in these areas that I mentioned, they don't have access to the skills that it takes to pass these tests, because those tests really don't measure intelligence. They measure strategy. It's more like, do you know how to answer this? And so, like, even in the presentation that I just came from, you know, like, they need to start realizing, like, what the barriers are. But everybody wants to be the best. Everybody wants to be Princeton and Harvard and Yale and Columbia. Everybody wants to be the Ivy League schools, which produce stupid people, too. The best thing about them, great marketing.
Mm-hmm.
That's really it. I met a couple dummies from Harvard. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I wish I had the Harvard president's paycheck, which is more than the president of the United States paycheck, but that's another issue. I leave that alone. Okay, see, this is what I do all the time. You know, I'm just saying. But I think forestry needs to take inventory of that,
mm-hmm.
and look at and try to get the other pieces of their institution to understand, like, our field is not a field for ignorant people who can't make it in engineering. No, I could have done engineering. I did well at UGA. I could have been a mathematician. I could have been another kind of doctor, you know, instead of a doctor of education. I could have been a lot of different things, because I felt like forestry is a biological science that really exposed me to a lot of different things. Remember I said genetics. I immediately started thinking tree and human genetics the minute I learned about tree genetics, immediately. I was like, oh, wow. And so I just think that forestry needs to take a step back and, number one, stop trying to be like everybody else. I think the leaders who are leading these institutions need to develop strong spines and stop asking the leaders of your institution to think about your school and get in his or her face and say, our school is the best thing at this institution, and you need to do a better job of promoting us at our institution right now. Like at the institution I work in now, which is NC State, University. We have a real brilliant chancellor. He came from Purdue University, but still doesn't know diddly about forestry in particular. And so when he's out talking, he's not telling our story, you know, but he's definitely telling the engineering story, the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences story, the Poole College of Management story. It's like, that's what they do, right? But we have to do a better job of telling our own story, especially if the leaders are not not leaning towards you in the first place. And so I think that we have to come together and really do a better job as a unit, as a discipline. And I believe we are, in my opinion, the only profession that's actually that's positioned to be able to do that. We are the only ones, because we have your UGAs, your NC States, your Oregon States, and then you have your Alabama A&Ms and your Tuskegee Universities and your Prairie Views in Texas and your Gramlins in Louisiana and your Southerns. So you have these schools, your Virginia States, your FAMUs, that have programs that align with what our historically white universities are doing. So the historically white universities and historically black universities really need to do a better job of coming together. But at the same time, what needs to happen is the schools that have more need to be willing to release what they have and let go of some of that, redistribute it to help out the HBCUs. See, people don't want to give up their position. They don't want to give up their convenience. And they want to, and I call it cowardice, just allow laws to tell you what to do. The laws are racist. The laws are on your side. The laws are not on our side. We need some courageous people to say, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to put this money up. We're going to open the doors. We're going to allow these folks to come in here. We're going to try to connect with them where they are instead of try to pull them where we are. You know, basically, we're going to try to do both. Because if we can nurture while challenging, you're doing it right. You know, take care of you while pushing you. And I'm saying that because I'm proud to say that as a diversity professional now, who is a forester, who is a pastor, who is a hip-hop artist, who's a workout nut, I'm all of this stuff, that the one group that has been the most active in my diversity work are white males. The same white males that people say are racist and wouldn't want to do this work, my white males, my forestry guys. I connected with them. They connect with me. We do a couple of excursions together. I talk their language. They talk my language. I'm vulnerable with them. Eventually, they become vulnerable with me. I'm vulnerable to a certain extent. I don't tell them everything, but they know that I'm being real with them. That's why we were out late last night. All my students, we all downtown. Now, they were drunk and I was not. It's funny. You know, I really got to work on my guys about drinking, but hopefully they wake up before they get married or whatever they decide to do in their life. But we were having a good time, you know? But we weren't having a good time devoid of diversity. Mm-hmm. We weren't having a good time devoid of talking about racism. No. We still talked about it. We were able to talk about it from an equal stance because they know a lot now too. And I know a lot about them. Mm-hmm. And they're not afraid to talk about it because they are very well aware of a lot of things and we're safe with each other. Mm-hmm. So I just think that we just got to do a better job of redistributing the power, redistributing the resources, and really switching up what we're doing and stop looking at the other person, you know, and I can check myself, you know, like I don't think everybody doesn't get it because I don't feel that way. But I do know a lot of people don't. But being able to be open and willing to be shifted, those guys shifted me. Those guys changed me. They say I changed them. No, they changed me. It does my heart good to take them to the worst part of Raleigh. They get off a bus, and the black kids run to them, or they run to them. And we get back on the bus, and their faces are heartbroken because they're leaving. And they go, when are we coming back? You want to come back next week? Well, I can't. So they go back on their own. That's what I'm talking about. See, that's why I know that this discipline can do a lot more. Mm-hmm. But we got to break away from the norm. It can't just be about people getting degrees and going and getting jobs. We got to be about building careers and changing lives and building community. We need to do what social scientists, I think, are pretty good at doing, which is make it about the people instead of making it about the discipline. Mm-hmm. Make it about the world instead of making it about the government. Make it about the community instead of only making it about the trees and the water. You know, because all of these resources are finite. We all got to use them. But if we can work together, we can help each other out. I learned so much more from a Peruvian farmer than I did from a civil culture professor. I learned a heck of a lot more from a Native American elder than I did from my dendro professor. But I've really learned almost a lot of what I needed to know now from my grandparents in the garden, how they took care of the community, than I did my whole academic career. Mm-hmm.
What type of advice are you giving those students when they go out into the workforce?
Don't act like you know everything. Don't be afraid of, like, I got a colleague of mine one time. I'm not going to say his name because I went off on him. And we're still all right. I think he's still nervous around me, though. We were doing a talk about strategic planning, and we admitted that we all needed cultural competence and stuff. And he was like, no, no, no. Call it cultural enrichment. Don't call it cultural competence. And I was like, why? Well, you know, we don't want people to feel like they're incompetent. I said, but you are. If you've been doing something 15, 20 years, a new crop of people come up that you've never dealt with before, you just might be incompetent on how to deal with them. Like, so we're going to change the title to make you feel better? That doesn't fix anything. That just strokes your ego, but you're still walking around ignorant, willing to do, you know, like, what you going to do? Like, no, no, this is what we're going to do. We're going to keep it as culture competence, and you better show your butt up and go through it. That's what I mean when I said I went off on him. He showed up, you know. It sucks when you're like 60 and I'm in my 30s. You know, it's like, unless you're a black belt, be careful. Anyway, the advice I tell my students is don't act like you know everything. Be willing to be taught something. Be willing to go at times, don't be stupid, but be willing to go where you're nervous of going. Expose yourself to things that you don't know and that you don't understand. Men, stop trying to tell women what they need to do and what they can do. You're not a woman. You have no idea what she went through. Shut up. Let her teach you. More intuitive than we are anyway. Heterosexuals, don't try to tell people with LGBTQ about their experience. You have no idea what folks are pushing through and fighting through. I tell my wife's students, whenever a black person's talking about racism or brown, period, talking about racism, that's not the time for you to open your mouth and start trying to push and prod them and ask questions and try to show people what you know, because you probably don't know. Stop. Listen first. Give them a chance. To my black students, do not always assume that white people are out to get you and that they're racist, because that's a lie, because they're not. You got to be open. Everybody has to change. No one gets away unscathed. No one gets unmarked. Everyone has to go through something. Everyone has to feel it. And my thing is, when everyone feels uncomfortable, we're doing something. When everyone feels comfortable, we're doing something. When everyone is like, I don't know, we're doing something. That's good. And when everyone can actually go, I think I know a little something. I think I got something to add. We're doing something. It can't be this imbalance, you know, of more white influence than black, but then black voice is louder than white when we talk about race stuff. It can't be like that. Everybody has to be heard, because this stuff impacts everybody. It's hurt everybody, which means that we can heal everybody. But those are the things that we all have to do, and that's what I tell my students.
I think that's very good advice.
Thanks.
Where do you see the profession of forestry being in 20 or 50 years from now?
20, 50 years from now. Well, if we do some of what I've learned and what I'm talking about, and if a couple of TV shows come out besides Parks and Recreation about forestry, I think we'll be a premier field.
Yeah.
You know, the politics, I think politics definitely plays a part in. I got to give the Obama administration a lot of props for really caring about green infrastructure and focusing on that. I do think that we need in our presidency, hopefully, more attention on that, because I think the more attention we put on that, that will also open more doors for forestry. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to have a national campaign around this. And so I think in 20 to 50 years, if we have that, and I'm serious, I mean, it's a joke, but I'm serious, if we can get a TV show or something about forestry. Because these kids do what they know, mm-hmm. and they go into what's hot. They go into what's sexy. Forestry's not sexy. Olivia Pope is sexy. You know what I'm saying? The woman who's a side chick with two guys. Don't even get me on that. I'm sorry. But still, I'm like, but that's what's sexy. You know, just like, yeah. Scandal. They like that. Grey's Anatomy. Like, they watch this kind of stuff. If I meet another black male student that wants to be a rapper before he's a doctor, I'm like, stop it. And I am a rapper. Like, stop that. Like, ooh, I'm sorry. I'm shaking the mic. You know? But I'm just like, come on, y'all. Let's do more. I think if we don't do that and if we don't get it together, we'll be obsolete. Mm. Forestry will get absorbed by colleges of ag and life sciences. Forestry will probably be moved to an anthropological school or something like that. I just believe that it's going to get shut down. If we don't expand our minds and open our fields and stop trying to be like everybody else and do what only we can do. Mm-hmm. So 20 years, obviously 20 years, that'd be what, 20, 36? Should I be 58? I won't be practicing then, I tell you that much. I'll probably be doing some other stuff. I'll probably be full-time music or something. I don't know. But we'll see. I think by 2058, I think it also depends on what we do with our resources. You know, I think that, I mean, like global warming is real. Climate change is real. And my thing is that if we can do what they have done in Sweden, like I love what they do in Sweden, like all of the houses are built from the same material, same kind of wood, all the house, all the people, most of the people there, I shouldn't say all, most people there know about forest practices. They are aware of what their forestry services are doing for them. People over here don't even know how to spell the word. You know, we really got to do a better job of getting what we do out there. And that takes money. That's it takes money. Maybe we need to stop trying to do all of this innovative research and start putting our money on the communities. I get so sick of hearing about what NSF is funding, what NIH is doing. And I'm just like, man, that stuff's not getting to the hood. Like, that stuff, it doesn't matter. That's irrelevant. It doesn't help the people who need it. It helps out the 2,000 people who read the boring journals. I don't care, you know? It helps the people who want to get tenure. That's good. Tenure won't protect you in the streets. It only protects you at an institution. So I'm like, y'all better grow some spines and get some multiple intelligences out here. 50 years, if they don't do what I think that I'm talking about, it will be obsolete. Mm-hmm. But if we do what I've suggested, and I'm not saying I'm the guru of it because I'm not. I don't know it all. I don't know anything, really. That's one thing I know. I don't know anything. But if we don't do some of that, if we do some of that, I promise you things will change. I promise you. Because the kids are going to see that and be like, man, that's cool. We work with middle school kids and got them enjoying the outdoors now, not afraid to hold an insect or a snake. Kids whose families are still scared of the outdoors, but they open a garden and now in the neighborhood because of these kids. See, you know what I'm saying? We can do this. We can change it. We can shift it. But certain people got to get out of the way, and they got to push that structure of what we use to promote, welcome, hire. We got to shift all that up because I believe that that is what's preventing us from doing what we're doing. You can't be a good faculty member and service to community by what we judge good faculty on at the same time. You can't do it. You're either going to please the institution or you're going to work in the community. It's one or the other. And most institutions don't work generally side by side within the community that they're based in. Don't believe me? Go to Duke University. Oh, shoot. You ain't got to do that. Go to my school. Go to NC State University. It's right there, you know. Mm-hmm. Shaw University is right down the street from us. Mm-hmm. Historically black school. Not much going on there. I mean, my college. I can say my college natural resources, we're great. I love it, you know. It's still challenges there, but we're great. But that's what I'm saying. We don't even do that. So, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was so passionate about it. I really didn't think I was going to talk this much. Okay, I'll pause. Sorry, Lori. My bad.
You don't have to apologize. I'm doing exactly what we'd hope folks would do.
Okay.
What role do you think, since we are at the Society of American Foresters Convention, what role does SAF have in pushing the forestry profession to be more inclusive?
A lady, she just said it this morning from, I'm mad I can't remember her school right now, but it's in Maryland. Frostburg? Yeah, in Maryland. She said in 2005. She only went to the Ecological Society of America, ESA, and a couple other conferences. And she was like, and these are the only ones that I would go to. And she said, why? Because they had childcare. Mm-hmm. I was a single parent. Man, you know, like when she said it, you could hear the in the room. Now, me and my colleague Sam Cook, we started laughing. Didn't we say that 12 years ago? Yes, exactly. You know, like, how is it? Us two black men, how is it that we said that too when we here and I first met? We need child care, these things. It was funny to us because we were like, dang. Because we sometimes thought that we were crazy. Like, no, maybe not. Maybe we don't know what we're talking about. SAF has a great opportunity to become a conference that is the example of what these other disciplines could be. Which means that SAF has, because forestry can be sexy. You just got to include everything. Environmental science, environmental technology, fisheries and wildlife, ethnobotany, soil science, include all of it, even scientific writing, whatever, because it trips me out. A lot of foresters, when they graduate BS, it's BS when you read their writing. But anyway, it's like, dang, how the hell we graduate you? But I just think that SAF needs to hear what we're saying. I hope they heard that sister who said that today and takes that into consideration. We need to basically kind of get out of the bubble that has really, in my opinion, satisfied white males in particular, and certain demographic of white males, and really started to be more inclusive and changing it to really be open and welcome to everybody. I mean, my supervisor is the dean, of my school. You know, she's the first dean that we've had that is a woman. This is not her first dean job. She was a dean at the University of Vermont. That's why I was so happy with her coming, because I was like, somebody who knows the job before they do it. You know, and I know she's had a lot of challenges. I know her personally now. I know she's had a lot of challenges getting to where she is. And even being here for the whole week, you know, with no family here. And she's here and she's having to negotiate and talk and politic and do everything. But I wonder, those guys in particular, I wonder how challenging that could be for her, that she's not represented in the room. Yeah, she's white, but she's not represented in that room, you know? So she assimilates. It's almost like she outmans the men to fit in, you know? And I'm not trying to insult her. I'm just saying, you know, but you can tell that. You can tell that, like, she's had to do that for her to fit in. Man, that's unfair. That's foul. That's wrong, you know, that our women would even have to do that. Go against, I'm not saying men can't be nurturing. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying just to go against what in some people, their natural nature, to fit in, to be okay. SAF needs to take a big lesson, because our profession can look like what some consider to be a Trump rally. And we can change it around. And we change it around. You know, it's hard for me not to laugh. I just said that. But we can change it around, because we don't have to look like that. Or if we look like that, we don't have to behave like that. You see what I'm saying? Because I'm not really caught on the look thing. I'm not even big on, let's bring people in here and diversify. No, because then you bring people in here, and like what almost happened to me, you put your mindset into my head. I start thinking like you. Then I become the conduit to keep people that look like me out now, because I'm doing what you do. Mm-mm. SAF guys, we got opportunity to change up everything. And starting from the top down, starting from U.S. Forest Service, starting with Tidwell, all the way down. Like, how do we do more work in these impoverished neighborhoods and still do things in the forest? See, that's the thing. You got to be willing to extend yourself. Mm-hmm. See, you, because people will complain, oh, well, you know, we don't have the resources, but you got the person power. You got people. Oh, no, you can do it. So you don't want to do it, but you want me to do it. So you want me to overextend myself. You want me to leave my hood and come to where you want me to go. And you want me to go to a place where I can't get my hair cut. And you want me to go to a place where I can't get my food. And you want me to go to a place where I can't buy my clothes. And you want me to go to a place that my parents are probably scared to go to. But you don't want to take a little piece of your budget and do a little something on the Chesapeake Bay. Or take a little piece of your budget and let's go to a different side of Florida or a different side of Georgia. That's what I think SAF needs to do now. We need to just have a whole conference that's focused on diversity, mm-hmm. instead of this mix, forestry technology, which is good. No, because we need it. I'm not saying get rid of it, but diversity is not something that needs to be part of a conference. It needs to be the conference. Mm-hmm. That's what they need to do right now. Mm-hmm. Such is the time as this. This is the right time. Because regardless of what happens, we still need to do that. We still need to do that.
For the sake of time, mm-hmm. Is there anything you'd like to add about forestry, SAF, or diversity that we didn't cover?
Yes. Now, you said for the sake of time, so let's see. Okay, 2 minutes. Dr. Warren Flick, mm-hmm. he was my professor at the University of Georgia in Athens. He was my policy professor. Still my friend to this day. And Dr. Flick. Well, my mom first, she snapped on me when I didn't pass the first test. She said, go, this is the second semester, right? You go and ask your professor for some help. Don't let her hear this, because she don't talk like that. She was like, oh, that's what I sound like to you? And I went to Dr. Flick, and I was like, Dr. Flick, man, I need help. I don't know where I'm going wrong in your class. I'm studying, I'm doing everything. His class was a lot about writing. And he sat with me for 3 weeks and helped me study. Helped me study. He was like, okay, when I'm saying this, Thomas, this is what I mean. Okay, when I say read this, this is what you should look at. He taught me what most of my classmates already knew, because I didn't know how to study. He taught me how to study. So when we had our next test, and the test score was 105, the low confident black guy in the class knew that wasn't him. I didn't understand why everybody else had their test in their hand and I didn't have mine. And I was like, I came to the test. I was about to cry in class, I remember, because I was like, I done flunked it. I came. How come I don't have my test? Oh, man. And he started reading all these answers. And I was like, man, that is cool. Whoever did that, I'm literally sitting there. That's one thing in my head. Man, that's a cool test. Man. And he said, oh, and this test belongs to Thomas Easley. And I went, oh. Because now I'm like, I'm not stupid. All those years, I thought I was stupid. You know, like, I thought that I was an imposter. You know, like, I didn't fit. And that changed me, you know, because he extended himself to me. I extended myself to him, and it changed my life. That's what forestry has to do now. Mm-hmm. They have to extend themselves to the communities that we want there. You can't, don't ask them to come to you. It's time for you to go to them. And you need to stay there until the trust gets mended. You need to stay there. It's not a go, no, stay there. It's somebody else's turn to be uncomfortable. It's somebody else's turn to sacrifice. It's someone else's turn to be inconvenienced. It's someone else's time. Forestry, it's our turn. It's our turn to do that. And I'm telling you, we do it right, everybody will want to be with us. Because when I talk to kids now, they all want to do forestry. When I finish with them, I want to do that. I talk to adults, man, if I could do, really? You did all of that and still a forester? That's the other thing, forestry, we have the opportunity to allow people to be themselves. I'm still a hip-hop artist. That's still central to me. I'm more that than I am a forester. I say that all day. Mm-hmm. But I'm more of a forester than a diversity professional. Mm-hmm. You know? So anyway.
I think we need more passionate folks like you out there. You say you talk a lot, but you talk with passion. And that's what excites people.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So just to finish up, we just need, for the sake of keeping script with documents, mm-hmm. I'm just going to ask you a few demographic questions, mm-hmm. and then you can head on out of here.
Okay.
If you could answer what year you were born, what gender you identify as, and mm-hmm. what your racial or ethnic background is.
1978, gender, male, his or him, my pronouns, and African American is what I identify as.